Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Vince McNally, one of your hosts. And with me this week, as he thankfully is every week, is my brother, friend, and traveling companion, Elliot McNally. Elliot, we're rubbing elbows with some stars today. Not one of our trips to Hollywood. You know, we like to hang out in southern LA from time to time, but instead, we're on the other end of the country.
We are. We're out east. And if I may, Vince, for all you listeners out there, RV, midday, late spring. I just wanted to, because this is more of an audible show than a visual show, to really establish where we are for the listeners.
Yes. Bench in RV. Soaked in Mountain Dew, plastered with pages of Chew on This from renditions and drafts long past.
Wow, that got dark really fast. And also, I think you delved a little too much into the interior, Vince, whereas I was focused on the exterior.
And appropriately so, Elliot. And why is that?
Because the town we're in today is all too focused on the exterior. It is one that I think all you listeners may be familiar with, even if you don't think you are.
Absolutely. If you're a fan of TV, the boob tube, the everyday cinema, you are going to love the town we're in today.
It's a town, Vince, I think we should get right to it and put on the map.
Couldn't agree more, Elliot. So listeners, unfurl, unfold, unfinagle your U.S. Comprehensive Rand McNally wall maps and find a little town in a little state. The little state of Rhode Island.
The town we're in this week is called Early Rhode Island, and it is home to the most homes and buildings featured in exterior establishing shots of films and television. This is a famous town in a little state, and here to talk to us is a prestigious housing agent of the town. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, my name is Brett Gladstone of Real to Real Estate. It's been a family business. We've been in business for, well, back to Mary Pickford in the United Artists days, back in the 1910s, 1920s. We've been supplying locations and houses for projects of all types ever since then. What project are you fellas looking to film out in our fair town?
Oh, don't let the camera deceive you. We're actually an audio-only show. So we do record the show on cameras, but it's only the audio.
Well, we do locations for audiobooks too, if that's what you want. I mean, it's got very good acoustics. You're going to lose a lot of the mid-century looks of it. But I mean, you can really tell the difference between a audiobook read on location and one that's in kind of a sterile studio. So I want you to just really think about putting the extra dollars towards that.
I never even thought about that. So let's say like the Harry Potter books, where were those read outside of?
Oh, those were read outside. Because this is such an old New England town, we have many houses that are filled with real spirits. And you, I mean, we charge extra for the real apparitions. There's this one house that's on Cherry Street. It's right at the end of the lane, and it looks like a haunted house. I mean, we have taken out most of the windows, put in fake cobwebs. We just installed a family of bats there last year, so they fly around the belfry of it. It's very Victorian looking, a little bit run down. We imported a couple spirits from Ireland. And they're angry ones, too. So that really added a little extra something to the reading. JK said she couldn't last more than 33 minutes inside the house. And so we took that as a real compliment.
That's a really specific amount of time to not be able to last. But your name again, sir?
It's Brett Gladstone.
Brett Gladstone. You know, I should have known it was Brett Gladstone, given how many Brett Gladstone billboards and painted benches there are in the city. That said, maybe we could just take a minute while you're putting the pin in early Rhode Island to explain to our listeners what a agent of the homes does. You might not be familiar, but everything from Hollywood productions to sitcoms to documentaries need mm-hmm. establishing shots. So that's your panovers, your slow zooms, et cetera, et cetera. The houses that feature in these neighborhoods and these establishing shots, they're represented by you. Isn't that right, Brett?
That's true. We have a number of options for any budget, any sort of production that you're doing. I mean, if you look down all the main streets and all the differing streets, because this town actually has four separate main streets, depending on how you want the street sign to look. So there's Main Street 1, Main Street 2, Main Street 3, Main Street 4. Main Street 1 is TGIF Street. Many of the houses on that street were used as exteriors for the ABC TGI Friday lineup during the 1980s and 1990s. And we can make any sort of changes that you need for your production, depending on if you need just a small establishing shot of a school, whether that's elementary, middle school, junior high, is it a Catholic school, or is it a run-down school? Maybe it's a gritty inner city. Maybe we have several schools with your choice of graffiti on them, depending on where the location needs to be. Wow. Yeah, we have a lot of options.
I feel like that was a veritable Chinese menu of housing types.
We have several Chinese restaurants, actually, depending if you want the Chinese-American experience or if you want something a little more authentic. This one over here, let me get out the catalog.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there. If you could maybe stick a pin in early.
Oh, sorry.
we'll save the sales pitch for after the cast, but until then, maybe you could talk about what's life like here in early Rhode Island. And first and foremost, please go ahead and jab that house-shaped pin right in the map.
All right.
While doing so, you handed us your business card, which of course says no exterior is inferior, and I feel like you believe that wholeheartedly.
I absolutely do. The best part about living here, because I've lived here my whole life, is you feel like you never have to leave. Mm-hmm. Any place that you want to be, you can be inside the beautiful confines of early Rhode Island. If you wanted to take a trip to Rome, let's say, and you want to find St. Peter's Basilica, and you want to go see where the Pope lives, we have a reasonable approximation of that over in the Italian Village area. And it was a mansion that was built during the late 19th century by the paper magnate Magnus Carlsen. He wanted to have an entire basilica built just for himself. And so it's right there with beautiful Italian marble. Or if you want something a little more rustic, maybe you want, like you see the Ponderosa on TV that was on Bonanza back in the 60s. My father sold that as an exterior. And that's over in Western Town. It's surprising that he was able to find tumbleweeds in Rhode Island, but he was able to do it.
You know, that's what really strikes me about this town is you're flexible and you're committed. You're committed to doing the job right, no matter how difficult the task. Elliot, this has been really interesting. Talk about a scenic drive in. While we were cresting over the Cape, headed down into Early, I felt like I was watching a million sitcoms all at once, uploaded into my optic nerves.
I completely agree. I mean, there's one thing to go to, let's say, the Hollywood Walk of Fame and walk where the stars walk. There's a different feeling of heading into Early and actually being where the stars worked. You know, like you're basically in the sitcom. You drive past the Fresh Prince of Bel Air house. You drive past the Growing Pains house, and you just feel like you're part of the family again.
You do.
Point of clarification, Elliot, is it called the Full House House? or just the full house?
You know what? I think we're going to have to put that on the message boards to have the listeners decide.
All right, everyone, log into the forums. We finally get that password issue taken care of. So if you just have to input your social security number as your password, and that should clear it up. We'll keep this nitty-gritty talk off the air, though. Why don't we vault, because you've already teased at it, Brett, into our first segment, one I'm really excited about.
And that's the Weekly Where's Vince. So listeners, of course, the Weekly Where's Vince is Vince's opportunity to investigate some notable neighborhoods. And Vince, I know that when you originally pitched me this idea for a segment, you pitched it as kind of an ironic name, that it would be the Weekly Where's Vince, but not every week. And I kind of chuckled and laughed it off.
No, I believe you're misremembering, Elliot. I was quite insistent that it be every week when I first pitched it. I must.
I think you weren't, but it's been cropping up more and more recently. And I don't have any data to support this, but I feel like our listenership plummets every single time we have this segment. But hopefully Brett can resurrect it for us.
And I am accusing you now formally of holding the charts to our data upside down on purpose, but that's neither here nor there. Brett, there are so many great neighborhoods in a town all about neighborhoods. Can we talk to kick things off, sort of in an ironic twist, about a little town that I got introduced to called Creditston?
Creditston is really the old part of Early. These are the homes that you'll see. These are the ones that you want to have just over the credits. You have it right at the beginning where you want to see, hey, this is a family house. There's a lot of, it's maybe a single dad and four kids, and he's just trying to cope. Maybe it's a loving family that's blended now, like three boys, three girls, and maybe a housekeeper.
So you're of course referencing the sitcoms Just Trying to Cope and Three Boys, Three Girls.
Three Boys, Three Girls. That ran on, it was four episodes.
Fewer episodes than Children. That's unlucky.
Well, it was a bad time slot. It was Fridays at 3 a.m., surprisingly, because that was the only time they could get on the air. And when you're losing to static, that's not a good sign for your future.
Not to be, of course, confused with Static and Sons, a sitcom of some reputation about an electrician and his three living adult sons. We're already digressing, though. I suppose it'll be easy to do on such a entertainment-focused episode. Creditston is interesting. The houses there, it must be said, even more than elsewhere in the city, not a lot of content to them, not a lot of fortitude and hardiness. Some of them, indeed, are just a single wall panel built straight up. So one of four faces of the home only.
What I'm interested, Brett, is how you sell these things to the networks. And I have a copy of your book here, Establish Yourself, The Art of Selling Exteriors. And it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, your tactic is to print out very large credits and hold them up over the buildings so the network executives can kind of get an idea of what the credits would look like.
Oh, that's true. I painted on a pane of glass, a pane of clear glass, and I get two stepladders. And my son, Brett Jr., he's 16 now, but I want to get him into the family business. He'll grab the other end, and we'll go to the top of the stepladder and very slowly move down the stepladder so people can get a sense of how the credits would look when they travel down in front of the house, because that's how you really understand what the credits are going to look like in credits.
And I got to take this opportunity to give you a shout out, Brett. So good is your art that they actually left your treatment of this sort of floating pane of credits in for the Laverne and Shirley show.
That was a real honor. I worked with my dad on Laverne and Shirley, and people didn't think you could recreate Milwaukee in Rhode Island. A little apartment where two young women would share an apartment in the 1950s. But we did it.
You made a whole brewery exterior.
It was a whole brewery exterior. It doesn't work anymore. Actually, really never did. We did have some bats in there, and we had. It was a weekend project where we made the assembly line. It's the big one in front of the actresses. We actually made that mostly out of erector sets and model airplane glue. It's amazing what you can do.
So the camera kind of fills the rest of it in.
I'm glad you brought up the bats again, Brett. You know, bats are... I did not expect so many bats when I came to this town.
Oh, the bats love it here. Especially because many of the exteriors that we create for these homes, there's nothing inside them, especially on the second floor, because no one ever go. Have you ever noticed in a lot of these sitcoms, no one ever goes up to the second floor. You're always in. You're in the family room. You're in the kitchen, and you never go upstairs to the bedroom. So, what we would do is we would just have these very empty, tall houses. So the bats would just go in there and make a home for themselves, and it can be a challenge. Especially if you're trying to have a nice sunny little family sitcom and this giant swarm of bats comes around, and I mean, some of these are meat-eating bats, so they'll take tiny voles and mice and rats and just snack on them. Most of them are insectivores, but a couple of the bigger ones, they'll take what they can get.
So I'm reading my show notes here, Brett. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just can't let this bat fact go unnoted. It says here that the bats can sometimes actually have an impact on the filming of these TV shows. Once the Munsters... family favorite, sort of a spin-off, a take-up of the Addams Family. It was once supposed to be a show called The Normal Family, but there were so many bats in the opening credit sequence that they filmed that they decided to make it some sort of faux horror show.
That's actually true. Well, at least as my father explained the story to me, it was the 1950s. They wanted to have a nice, normal, wholesome, all-American family, and so they went up to that one house we mentioned earlier with the big Victorian with the bats, and they, for whatever reason, they were just really attracted to it, and they went ahead to have a beautiful sort of family picnic in front of the house. So they got the volleyball net, and they got all of the picnic blankets. And it was just a really nice, wholesome time. And then the bats swooped down and started attacking.
I heard that actually Butch Patrick almost left the show because he gotten so many bat bites, until he saw some bats holding up one of your panes of glass with the Munsters printed on it. And then it just helped him imagine what the show could be. So you guys actually ended up employing the bats to hold the credits up.
It's true. Unfortunately, the bats later picked Butch up, and they held him up in the tower of that house for, it must have been 2 hours, 47 minutes or so, thereabouts. And it was a real negotiation. Ultimately, we traded Butch for a bushel of bananas, 6 field mice, and $50. $50 in American dollars, which is a lot of money at the time.
And another great sitcom, too.
Yeah, it's a great sitcom.
A bushel of bananas and 6 field mice.
Oh, that funny thing. They ended up choosing another house for that one, even though was set in a haunted house.
That does seem unlikely.
Seems unlikely.
That's strange. Creditston was really one of my favorite stops on my journey through early, but is there a neighborhood that you think I should have hit that maybe I didn't?
If you're going to ask, I'm going to tell you about the place that I went when I was just a young boy, and my father would take me up to little known district just up on the hill. It's called Silent Hill, actually. Not the one you're thinking of, but it's where all the...
I had a little ominous feeling, especially given all the bats that are always around.
Oh, no, this was Silent Movies. So it was a lot of exteriors for Silent Movies. There's that house that went over Buster Keaton and he just popped up through the window. That house is over there. And it was very fortunate because that was a terribly built house. The whole side just collapsed, and luckily it went right. Buster Keaton just came right through. We haven't replaced it yet. I mean, that thing's been there for about 100 years now, and that's just, it's just filled with mold and rot. But, you know, it still gets used every now and again.
Well, you know, in silent films, they say that the exterior of the homes really did the talking.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have as much character as possible because, you know, there was no color, there was no sound, there was nothing.
And some of them actually, when they went to talkies, we tried to adapt some of these houses to that. If you go all the way to the end of Lloyd Lane, named after Harold Lloyd, of course,
sure.
There's the one house at the end actually has lips on it that used to move. And we tried to get someone to, to get someone to put it in a movie as the talking house. Because, like you said, the houses used to speak so much without words. And so we thought, well, let's have this house speak with words. And it didn't go.
Of course, that was Herman the Talking House.
Herman the Talking House.
One episode, and it freaked so many people out that they had to cancel it immediately.
Herman was really, really depressed about that. Because he thought... Herman thought it was his big break, and...
This was a century
Herman,
house.
Herman, the house himself?
The house himself. It was a sentient house. A lot of witchcraft in this town. We don't talk about it, but we acknowledge it every once in a while. But Herman was a sentient house. Small house, just a Cape Cod. But he wanted to sing, not dance, because, again, that would... pull up the foundation of the house, and it did have a lovely basement, half finished, but it was just had the windows for eyes and the three doors to make a mouth, and legitimately was horrifying for the children. I think a children's show was probably not a great idea, but
it was the inspiration for Pee Wee Herman, though.
It was.
It all worked out in the end.
It was, and he owes us. I took him to court in the 1980s for ripping that idea off on behalf of the estate of Herman the Talking House. Unfortunately, we did not win, no matter what court we tried. We went on the People's Court.
You took Paul Rubens to the Court.
We took Paul Rubens to the People's Court about this. We took out pictures. We had pictures that very clearly showed that Cherry and Terry and even Jambi were influenced by the organs, per se, of Herman the Talking House. And I'm sorry, this is because I was a good friend of Herman. And the case collapsed. And
so perhaps, Elliot, this is good a time as any. We could talk about the neighborhoods here in Early, and you know, if I had my way, we would all the live long day. But I think our listeners probably have even more pressing questions that it's our responsibility as show hosts to get to.
I agree, Vince. Let's get to those in the next segment. Wouldn't you like to know?
So listeners, Wouldn't You Like to Know is your weekly opportunity to write into our program with your specific questions, queries, and inquisitions that pertain to the town that we're visiting, and usually to our guest. And in a weird twist of events, I actually have the first question for us.
Wow, this is very interesting. What does it have to say, Vince?
This one comes from Bradley in South Miami, Florida.
Huh, okay. Thanks for writing, Bradley.
Now, Bradley writes, we already talked about, he's not writing this, this is my colored commentary that precedes his letter. He writes, we're talking about books that you've written, Brett. We already mentioned, what was that title again, Elliot?
Establish Yourself.
Yeah, Establish Yourself, exactly. We've mentioned Establish Yourself, but we haven't mentioned your other publication, not your only other publication, one of many. This one is called
Credit Where Credit's Due.
Credit Where Credit's Due. Exactly. So now, do you want to tell us a little bit about this book and what it has to do with your business?
Well, that book was the It was really the spiritual sequel to Establish Yourself. Because the Establish Yourself, that was about making a name for yourself as a house agent. And the Establishing Shot. And credit where credit's due, that's really more of a coffee table book. Has a lot of pictures of the great credits, the end credits, beginning credits, middle credits, which is less used, but still can be very powerful, in front of a nice piece of real estate.
I love that the cover of the book is a transparent piece of glass, plexiglass, and you can write your own credits on it and hold it up and make your own show almost.
Now, that's a real conversation starter. Brett, hey, I'm already putting my pre-order for your book here on Amazon. That's not the book that Bradley has written about.
Oh.
Bradley instead has written about, and I can't verify this that this exists, so please push back. They'll never be your exteriors, colon, in smaller font. How you'll never truly be alone when you're an agent to Star Homes.
That was my memoir. It was a small run. Some would say it was self-published. It really was self-published. The initial first run was about 68, give or take.
Where did you record the audiobook?
I recorded the audiobook. See, that's the problem. I when I was pushing this to Random House, they made me do it in a just sterile studio in New York, and I tried to fight it, but I mean, this was such a personal project for me that I wanted it to get made that I relented to them, and I regret it.
Say, you can't trust a place called Random House, am I right?
You can't trust a place called Random House because you don't know which house it is. It's a random house.
Despicable.
So I ended up doing it myself. And it was a real shame. I re-recorded it in the Golden Girls house because I thought it would be some pastels. It would be a little funnier. Maybe I would get the ghost of B. Arthur to give some color commentary.
But
I read the footnotes.
Ghost of B. Arthur.
Ghost of
B.
Arthur.
She was dead at this time.
She was about to be. At this time,
Arlie starting to separate from her body.
It was just a matter of time. But yes, that ghost was her presence as Dorothy Zabornak was giving me withering looks and harsh put downs all through the reading. And I thought it did well, but Random House disagreed. So
wow. Well, I'm sorry. That's definitely a pun intended storied history of your publishing debacles. But if I may say, credit where credit's due is great. Establish Yourself is great. They can't all be winners to the public eye.
That's a good title. They can't all be winners to the public eye. That's a good title.
I see you've written that down too on the back of one.
I wrote that down. I wrote that down.
Why you take some extra notes, I'm going to read our next letter. And this comes from Michael in Atlanta, Georgia.
Michael, thanks very much for writing. What does he have to say?
Michael says he's never been to early Rhode Island, but it seems like he has because he loves all the TV shows and films that have used the exteriors of homes from there.
We get that a lot.
I'm sure a lot of people feel that way, right at home and early. He says one film in particular that stuck with him is the 1970s thriller Deliverance and the exterior of the famous Dueling Banjos house.
That was some doing. That was some doing right there.
How much doing was it, Brett?
It was a lot of doing. It was. I would say it was approximately 3.28 times the regular amount of doing. So it was a lot of doing.
And I will say, usually our listeners are wildly inaccurate about the history of the film Deliverance. The three or four letters we've gotten.
They just can't seem to get it right, can they, Elliot?
No,
but Michael seems to be onto something. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, this house, he is correct. It was in early Rhode Island, but it looked exactly like it was in Georgia.
That's true. One of the things we did is we took it was a brand new house, and we very carefully just stripped off a lot of the paint, stripped off a lot of the wood, weathered the wood, and then for whatever reason, this tiny boy who played the banjo just actually showed up one day. We have no idea.
A, to- A young child?
The young child with the banjo. He just showed up one day. No one knows where he came from. But he came up with a banjo and that crazy look in his eyes. Like his eyes were too close together, like his parents were cousins or something. And he just sat down on the front porch and started playing. I mean, that was creepy.
So this was a fully improvised scene.
It's true. That was just a little bit of cinematic magic. That scene's not even in the book. That scene is nowhere near the book. There's nothing in the book that indicates that there's a small child playing banjo very creepily while staring into your soul. There's nothing there. That was great exterior work.
Wow, I guess I have to reread the book. We're focused on the movie so much that I never relate the two. But, I mean, it has such an amazing history.
Fascinating. Brett, now, do you want to do us the honors of reading the third question for us?
Certainly. Let me see what we got here. This is from Michael in Ivanhoe, New York.
Another Michael.
Let's see what our question is. What is your most favorite exterior of all time?
Wow, that's a tough question.
That is a tough question.
A realtor like you.
I would have to say it was my first one. It was my first exterior.
Nobody forgets their first.
We had to recreate a Brooklyn neighborhood for the show Welcome Back, Kotter. And I mean,
really an underrated program.
And the problem is like where else are you going to go to recreate Brooklyn but Rhode Island? I mean, that's what everybody's thinking. So we had to give them something a little extra. So you see that sign that says "Welcome to Brooklyn," so that like you actually know, boom, you're in Brooklyn, and you have the exterior shots of all these tenement buildings. I mean, it started out as a lovely bit of just small homes, maybe a couple ranches, couple Cape Cods, and we had to bulldoze and put about 30 families out on the street just to recreate those tenement buildings, have all of the lines where people's laundry was hanging outside, some kids riding their bicycles down the street, and we created an entire train system, or at least approximately 0.72 miles of a train system that just went back and forth and back and forth. And again, most of that was an erector set and modeling glue. They just went back and forth. And so you got that train, you got that real feel of the, that you're crossing the Brooklyn Bridge and actually going into Brooklyn. But instead, it was mostly exteriors. It was half brick, half cardboard, and about 0.04% just sand and gold glitter.
Talk about improvised materials.
Well, you use what you have.
So you guys did all that and displaced all those people and spent all the money for the 28-second intro of Welcome Back, Kotter.
But every second was worth it.
Now, if our listeners are interested in learning more about this story, it's kind of a famous point in your career, you can read your nonfiction novel. I'm reading this off the Amazon book review. Potters, Cotters, and Harlem Globetrotters, my favorite moments in Moving Homes.
Ah, that was a controversial book, because after my memoir, I said, you know what, I want to tell the real story again. The stories that everyone else always wants to hear. So, it was, do you remember that book, The Kid Stays in the Picture?
Oh, of course, yes. So you took a Robert Evans approach?
I took a Robert Evans approach to that, and just like telling the great stories, the great loves that I have of exteriors, and how they've really influenced not just my life but yours as well. It was my favorite book to write because it was about me and houses.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Elliot, I'm learning so much. I always seem to learn so much on this show. That's what I love about it.
Me too, Vince. I think that we can even learn a little bit more, not from each other, but from the citizens of early Rhode Island. See what's going on.
Ooh, Elliot, do I smell one of my favorite segments coming up?
I think you do, and that's He Said, She Said.
So, listeners, He Said, She Said is a look at maybe some information that you guys might call uncouth. Maybe you think it's a little tawdry, or maybe you think it is scintillating and interesting like we do. We're talking about who's talking about, what's talking about, what's going on in the town that we're visiting. It's our gossip segment, a look inside the conversations of day-to-day citizens. Brett, you are a man who moves, you're a man who shakes hands, gives hugs, hands out business cards. You must have your finger on the pulse of the town's gossip, mustn't you?
I do. And most of the gossip either involves me or I am tangentially involved with.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, trying to move a bunch of people out of their homes, rebuild things, establish new settings is going to put you at the crux of a lot of gossip. So what's going on in the town lately?
Well, there's a real fight coming on. The next Star Wars picture, they wanted some exteriors on a planet in space. So I thought, well, we've got a few acres over here, bulldoze all the houses. And I mean, honestly, some of these houses, it doesn't take a lot to bulldoze because it's mostly just the front of the house, but we will just decimate it. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to have like small explosions where the houses were to just, I mean, not just level them, but to make it look like nothing has ever been there. So we're going to turn about, and I want to be precise here, it's going to be 8.45 acres of this town into desert planet. So it's just going to be a desert planet. So we'll move the people out. We'll drop all sorts of explosives on it and just import some sand from the coast and just put it out. And maybe a couple houses, depending on what they want. But I think it's a real opportunity for the town. And the people living in the houses, not happy about it. They're starting a smear campaign, is what I would call it.
Brett, you brought your plans for this cinematic universe here, and it looks like this is it's a pitch. You haven't won the business yet, but you're still in process of bulldozing hundreds of homes.
You see, it's that level of attention. I mean, do you think that they would have given me any credits on sitcoms if I didn't take that pane of glass and just move it up and down very slowly in front of a house? No, they have to see a proof of concept. And I want them to understand that for exteriors, you can't do a desert planet like Tatooine any better than 8.45 acres in early Rhode Island.
So are there any other, let's call them little exteriors that didn't quite make the cut, that you put all that proof of concept forward, and then they went a different direction?
Yeah, this one still stings. I built and created an exterior for a casino in Las Vegas. We were going for Ocean's 12, not 11. Ocean's 12.
So bigger, better.
The Jan Brady of the Oceans movies.
Exactly, because they did not use my casino.
Because it looked like the exterior of the Brady Bunch.
I thought they would want to go in a kitschy way. It's the Brady Casino. So they would come in, and you remember where the staircase that they would go upstairs. I mean, that's the staircase to the slot rooms, and then you'd have. Mannequins of Alice and Mrs. Brady and Mr. Brady. They're just, the mannequins are at the blackjack tables, they're at the roulette tables. You can even see the blueprints that Mr. Brady lost on the roller coaster in King's Island. You can even see that, and that lights up as a Keno board.
Wow. And you wanted Ocean and all the 11 to peer around the banister one
the 12,
head at a time.
Elliot, the 12.
Oh, the 12. They did the that 12. In the 11 movie. But you wanted all 12 of them to peer around the corner, their heads stacked up, just like the Brady Bunch, too.
That's right. Here's the story of a man named Danny who had 12 girls who were going to be felons or something like that. You know, I'm not a lyricist. But it's something like
that. So you recorded this song, too, as proof of concept.
I recorded it in the house. I didn't even... those were the lyrics. I didn't even have the lyrics. But I said, you know what? You need the proof of concept. So you're going to have the song that's playing on a continuous loop as you're in the casino.
Fascinating.
I got gambling legalized in Rhode Island just for this. Just for this, but
worth noting, it says here in the show notes that this is where the saying "the house always wins" comes from.
That's true. The house. Wow. Always
so,
always
what do people say when you're in the throes of all this? Are people excited? Are they scared that you're not going to get the business? What happens?
The people who work with me, I'd like to say it's a love-horror relationship. So because they understand that I have this love, I have this passion, and I have this exacting eye. I'm like Stanley Kubrick, but with just exteriors. But then, like the amount of work that I have to put into it, and the standards to which we have to live up to, the standards of early Rhode Island, it can be... I mean, I've had lawsuits. Settled out of court, all of them. But it's difficult to find people who don't have the same passion, who understand things in the same way I do.
And to our listeners who want to learn more about this vision of yours, You've been on a book tour across the country selling Stanley Kubrick's A Interior Space Odyssey.
That's true. I it's not Lego. You can't say Lego. But it's Lego-like. It's they're toy blocks, that's the plastic blocks that snap together, and they're Stanley Kubrick's. They're little sets where you could recreate exteriors from early Rhode Island that he used in some of his films. Like there's a battlefield scene from Barry Lyndon. There's the house where they have the crazy sex scene from Eyes Wide Shut. Who could forget that one?
The perfect replication for a child's toy.
Exactly. It's ages 8 and up. I mean, if they're 8 and up, I think they should understand about masked sex parties.
That's right. It's basic Birds and the Bees stuff. Wow, this has been illuminating in so many ways. Elliot, it's with great tantalization that I want to dive into this next segment.
I do too, Vince. It's one we call Did You Know?
So listeners, much like our guest Brett Gladstone today, you might not have much time to sit around and listen to a whole episode of a podcast, but you sure as shoot might have time to listen to a rapid-fire fast factoid trivia segment. That's what we do here on Did You Know? We have 5 fast facts that we fire back and forth. Elliot, I think you've got the first one.
Of course I do. Vince and Brett, did you know that early Rhode Island has the most lost people at any given time per capita of any town in the United States?
It's true. They go into... They think it's their home. I mean, it looks like something that they've seen on TV a million times. And they go inside, and maybe we didn't put in a basement. Maybe it's just a giant trapdoor. And then they fall, not all the way to the center of the earth, but I will say we do get steam vents. We do get some steam vents from the earth's mantle.
And I was also referencing the fact that you mentioned before that there are several main streets. There's a Welcome to Brooklyn sign. There's a Welcome to several different cities. So people wander into Early and they have no idea where they are.
Welcome to Cottersville. Though I don't think that's where actually the show was set. It wasn't set in a place called Cottersville, was it?
It wasn't, but we put one up anyway just to give them proof of concept.
That's right. Yeah, it's hard to navigate because the roads are named haphazardly based on, you know, their applications in TV, and also it's hard to tell where you are because everywhere looks kind of like everywhere else.
That's true. I mean, what one day it could be just an ordinary two-story house, and the next day it could be the planet Tatooine. The next day it could be Miami Beach, where we truck in something that looks like the ocean with palm trees and everything, and you don't know where you are in any day to day.
I don't know where we are right now.
Confusing.
I didn't know that, but Elliot and Brett, did you know that not only original series but also crossover episodes are very popular here in Early because they need these one-time establishing shots that usually aren't used throughout the entire season.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, I've got a list. I'll hand it out here. My favorite one from the list is, and they come with little pictures, it's Third Rock from the My Three Sons.
That's a good one.
Now, we'll talk about a period blend. We're talking early cinematic history, Rise of Hollywood, and late primetime.
Getting all those planets to dance around behind... You see, those interstitials on Third Rock from the Sun, that wasn't computer animation. We actually did that. We created these giant planets and put them in a field that we spray-painted purple and dotted little stars in it. And then we got some of the school kids from early elementary, and they would just move those planets around like they were shaking, and then we'd throw things at them like they would ricochet like they were comets or something.
So you guys did home and building exteriors and celestial exteriors
and celestial exteriors as well. And when we threw the ball off of Saturn that one time, unfortunately, during that episode, it gave the actor who was playing Chip Douglas a concussion. So that was another one of the lawsuits we settled.
No lasting damage for Chip.
No lasting damage.
I mean,
no.
It's all right, but you know that's showbiz. That's showbiz.
It's showbiz. Yeah, he looks good for a wheelchair.
Brett, do you have a did you know factoid for us?
I do. Did you know that early Rhode Island has the largest vacancy rate of any city in the United States of America?
You know, that really, it does make a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
But why is that?
Well, because we're always building new houses, and I'm always driving people out with my schemes to get more business into early Rhode Island.
So you're calling them schemes.
Well, I'm very upfront about it. I mean, it's a housing scheme. I mean, it makes it sound like a caper. And it's a little bit of a panache to what can be. Well, I mean, a lot of my job is dealing with local city government and getting proper permits and getting proper things and construction materials in order. So I have a little bit of fun with it.
Well, you can see one of your billboards out the window of our RV where we're recording right now, and it's you kind of shrugging your shoulders, and the tagline is, "It's a scheme."
Hey! It's a scheme!
Good old Brett Gladstone. Everyone knows him.
Hard not to trust a man who's so upfront about the capers, the hijinks, the boondoggles that he gets involved in.
And don't forget the shenanigans.
Oh, I would.
How could we?
And I didn't know that. Now I do. But did you guys know that many times the home's exterior is not indicative of what the interior holds in early Rhode Island?
I'm fascinated, Elliot.
So, Brett, I'm sure you can shed some light on this, but the one that comes to mind that I walked by the other day is the Flintstones home exterior from the early 90s movie starring John Goodman. That wasn't actually a Flintstone home, obviously. It looked like one, but it was a Russian bathhouse inside.
It was. So we were able to use that again with the movie Rounders. So we were using the exterior for Flintstones, and it just looked like slate on the outside and very, very basic. Mm-hmm. But we turned it into a Russian bathhouse. The poker game is actually played in the basement of that house. So we gave them the interior for both of those as well. It was a 2-for-1 with New Line Cinema. But I mean, I think they got value out of it.
Are there any places that you'd recognize the exterior, but then the interior is something completely different?
Oh, yes. One of the exteriors we did, and it was a very very famous exterior, was the beautiful giant mansion home that was in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil in Savannah, Georgia. So it was set in Savannah, Georgia, but we had this wonderful little bit of antebellum south all the way up here in early Rhode Island. And if you go to look at the exterior, it was from the Eddie Murphy TV series, The PJs. That looked like, it looked claymation on the inside with and it was smaller than you'd expect, but it looked like just a row of flats that you would have in an urban area. But wow. It was surprising that Mr. Murphy, and he's a lovely man by the way, was able to get so much out of that incongruity.
That's amazing.
Sorry, little bit of sawdust here. That's yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a plume of various paint chips and material pieces when you cough there.
It's true.
Gotta take care of yourself.
I do. It's you know, I love my job. And when you're actually using high explosives to level part of the town, 8.45 acres, to turn it into a desert planet, I mean, you're going to get some splinters in your lungs.
And it goes without saying. Well, I've got one more fast did-you-know fact for us here. Did you know, and I'm sure you do, Brett, mm-hmm. Early is following in Netflix's footsteps and coming up with an original series of its own.
Oh, wow. This is amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's called Family Batters, and it mm-hmm. follows a family of bats and the things that they have to go through, like, you know, their teenage daughters started dating and their mm-hmm. younger son got into a fight at school, and it's tough being a family of bats in a world full of humans.
It was a personal project for me to sell that to
you're the producer on Family Batters.
I'm the producer on Family Batters. We have 13 episodes on Early Vision. We're calling a streaming service.
Hold on, wait a second. Hmm?
The Early Vision logo looks identical to the Netflix logo.
Red and black is a very popular color scheme.
But does it have to say the word Netflix, I wonder, on it?
Look, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here.
Fair enough. You're the producer.
We're going to take what works and put our own spin on it. So the Netflix logo, it looks very good. People recognize that. And so we wanted to get a piece of that. Just get a piece of that action for Early Vision.
So that means that the citizens of the town mm-hmm. will live in a town... Mm-hmm. And then they'll watch their own town on Early Vision, but it will represent a different town.
Yes.
It's like they're living in some weird Charlie Kaufman nightmare.
Yes, it really is Synecdoche, New York. Yes.
Guys, I have to say I'm even a little exhausted after all of those fast facts. It really was an influx of knowledge unseen before on our program. So to Brett Gladstone, who's a busy man, author, auteur, and producer, mm-hmm. not to mention agent to Star Homes, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. So, so what kind of project are you doing? Because I got some lovely tiny homes here. That's a new trendy thing. Like, it could be a house that's very, very small, but surprisingly roomy inside. Just let me know, boys.
Yeah, Vince, I think we should look into like a timeshare or something to record some These Parts special episodes.
Oh, I could certainly set you up. Do you want? Because if Star Wars isn't a go, you could record on a desert planet.
That sounds pretty enticing. I don't know about you, Vince.
2 weeks on Tatooine.
Well, Vince, why don't you segue us into our next segment? I'm going to get out my checkbook right now.
Sanders certainly going to approve of whatever number you put on that line, Elliot.
It's blank.
Even better. Yeah, let's get into our last segment with a heavy heart. It's called Wish You Were Here.
So listeners, of course, you can't travel with us around the country, but we give you the next best thing each week. It's a farewell postcard from us to you. It goes something like this. Dear listener, wish you were here in early Rhode Island.
The town where more initial establishing shots in television history have been used than anywhere else.
And that's all thanks to housing agent and professional schemer, Brett Gladstone.
You're welcome.
It's a town where your home might get bulldozed in a ill-fated hijink in an attempt to get a little more business.
It's a town where you may be either eaten by bats or enjoy watching them on television.
It's a town where in every home, even if it's completely gutted and just a one-wall exterior, you're going to find a little bit of history.
And it's a town where you can establish yourself.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Listeners, hope you enjoyed early Rhode Island, and be sure to visit us next week when we're in Colson, Michigan.
Colson, Michigan is the original Motor City. Located in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, it's a steampunk town that denounces Henry Ford and all of his inventions. They only like coal-powered vehicles there. Wow, that sounds interesting. Don't miss it.